This is Get a Real Job, the podcast devoted to people who choose risk over safe bets, who pursue their passion against all odds and are doing what they want, how they want, despite people and sometimes the voices in their own heads telling them they're nuts.
When the field that I wanted to work in didn't exist, I created it.
The only thing you have to decide is how hard do you want to work.
I really never went into the design of the restaurant of not succeeding. One way or another, I was going to succeed.
I'm your host, Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Thanks for listening. And now, get a real job. Today's guest is a best-selling author who has spent three decades teaching individuals and companies how to tap into their innate intuitive abilities to create big impact. Now, I'm a little too dumb to understand exactly what that means, which is why I've brought in a super smart pal of mine, producer and talent booker, Ruth Hilton. Ruth is the founder of the Hilton Media Group and is responsible for booking some of the smiling faces you've seen on recent covers of Entrepreneur Magazine. So first, welcome, Ruth. Thank you for your help. And join me in welcoming today's guest, Laura Day. How are you, Laura?
Hi, happy to be here.
Laura is sitting on a very pink-looking piece of furniture. Ruth has very pink-looking hair, so it's all coming together here.
And you have pink cheeks.
That's true.
Great theme. It's a great theme.
So if you could explain a little bit, I did a terrible job of explaining what you do. Can you explain what you do?
So my day job is that I predict the future for companies. And I do it in an atypical way for most business consultants, which is that I do it in the absence of any information about the company, except, of course, the company name. And over time, I've had the same clients for 30 years. So over time, I do learn about the company. But intuition is non-local perception. So it's an innate ability that has been well documented and well tested by major universities as well as the military, but it's all of our innate ability to move our attention, meaning your five senses, in time and space. So for example, the tag word is non-local perception. So if I give you coordinates, what's at this remote location? I know my competitors are having a meeting today. What's being discussed? We think the market is going to go this way in the next 6 months. What are you sensing? And my ability is my ability to kind of go with all of my senses and in bits and pieces, feel out a reality that a company may not have anticipated. There's so much unbelievable research on this ability with novices, not with psychics or intuitives, but with novices. And these experiments, you know, look like this. We can now measure what the human brain does. So they'll have a computer randomly generate a future image, and they can see that your brain reacts to that image in advance. The computer hasn't even chosen it yet. So many, you know, from the 50s onward, there's been a lot of documented research on this innate ability. What there hasn't been a lot of is how do we use the ability to tell the future? How do we use the ability to view a location that we've never seen and report on it? How do we use telepathy? How do we use these abilities to create stronger realities? You know, the esoteric part, everybody knows how to use. The weird stuff, everyone seems to know how to do. But how do you do it to find your keys? How do you do it to tailor?
Well, I'd like to add to that, Liz. How do you do it to pick the winning lottery numbers? I think that's what everyone wants to know.
Lottery numbers are hard, and I'll tell you why. We have preferences. So, for example, give me a 4, a 7, or an 11, and I'm in love. Give me a 2, don't want to hear about it. So we all, one of the things that I train companies and civilians to do is to dissociate from what they know, but we have human bias. So a lot of the way I do my training is how do we get around that natural bias? Picking 6 numbers that you, where you have favorite numbers, you may have seen a number many times that day. You know, there's so many biases you have to get around that actually it's a very, very hard thing to do.
So Ruth, you're kind of in the predicting business also. You're predicting which celebrity is going to sell magazine covers. So I wonder, do you have some intuitive thing that I haven't known about, even though we've known each other for 20 years or so?
I mean, probably. I mean, definitely. No, I mean, what I do is fairly data driven, as you know. And then, but yeah, there is a certain amount of gut instinct. I'm actually curious, Laura, are there any like simple tips that you could sort of give the listeners on how to sort of find an entry point to what you do for in their own lives?
Absolutely. But I just want to go back to something you said, Ruth. You said what you do is data driven. What I do is data driven. It's that our data comes from different places. So people confuse kind of creativity and broad spirituality with intuition. Intuition is the ability to respond to a question with data that you have had no prior exposure to. And it's one of the reasons, for example, I don't do diagnosis for a civilian. I'll do it for a doctor for their patients, because a lot of the time I don't understand the data I'm getting. My clients do. And so it is data driven and it is evidence based. So I've been working for the same companies for over 30 years. I'd be fired if it didn't work. And people are most intuitive if they're successful in their area of expertise. So that's a place where we know our questions, because what intuition needs, you asked for tips, what intuition needs is intuition needs to know what the information's about. So all of us as individuals, we have a gazillion questions and we're getting lots of information, but just like finding something in my shoe closet where no pair seems to stay together, you can't find the information because there's no filing system for it. Whereas when you train intuition, the first thing you do is you know what your questions are. So Ruth, in your business, you know what the market's questions are. So often I'm sure you catch yourself not putting someone in the cover and they're outed a month later and you realize why you didn't put them on the June issue. So there wasn't data on that. And one of the things we've learned is the data we have access to is often incorrect. You know, when I was young, hydrogenated oils were all the thing, better than butter, better than oil. Now we know they kill you. So it's, you know, our data is only as good as its accuracy. And a good, someone like Ruth would evaluate her data using logic, but also using something else. And that would be the difference between her being employed and her being unemployed. It's, you know, most of us have access to the same data. It's our sorting system. So A, know what your questions are, get them out of your messy mind and write them down. And don't make a laundry list of 30 things. That's just taking your inner mess and making it an outer mess. What are your three top questions? So the way I work with a company is they call me and I say, shoot, we don't even say hello. And they say, should I buy this, you know, should I invest in this company, or will this IPO do X, Y, and Z? First thing I have to do is reframe the question, because shoulds, well, you know, they're nice. They feed dogs, you know, sure you should, but their stock price is going to tank. So what is the actual question? So you want to set your targets. What are your questions? Limit them to 4 or 5 and really put them almost on different pages or different frames so that you have a filing system. And then what you'll notice is that you begin to have out of the blue senses. So not what your data says, but I keep wanting to look at this that seems unrelated, and you don't find until 2 months later it's related. You need to document all of those out of left field, don't fit the logic hits that you get. The reason you need to document them is hindsight is really inaccurate. So set your targets, document, and then verify. verification comes in two ways. One is because a lot of intuition is best in telling the future, it comes with time. But also often there are reasons to believe based on data that what you're saying is accurate. It's just data that no one's looked at. So there were reasons to believe that the market was going to tank, and I forget what it was, 07 or 08. It's just I got a hit because I was the only one intuitively looking at it because I'm out of the typical box. So I'm sure Ruth does that without identifying she does that. It's helpful, however, to identify the hits, the accurate pieces of data that came, especially in advance, you know, with no other way of your identifying them. Because when you do that, you begin to exercise a muscle. You know, if you don't know there's a door, what a door does, you're not going to open it. So it exercises that muscle. So have your targets, keep track of those left field places that you're pulled, and then verify, 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 and look, once you have an intuitive hit, look for what other data may exist that substantiates it. So with a credit crunch, we could have seen, if we were looking in the right places, the data was there that we were on a slippery slope, just no one was looking at it, or almost no one. I was not the only person. There were a couple, but not enough, or we wouldn't have had a crash.
Well, okay, so there's a lot there, which is pretty amazing that you're able to break it down.
Day job.
So distinctively. You know, one thing that we talk a lot about, or a lot of entrepreneurs talk about, is, you know, you got to follow your gut instinct. But that can be frightening, especially when there's a lot of money or your entire livelihood on the line. You're kind of like get a little bit paralyzed with decision making. Like, how do you train yourself to really recognize these things that you're talking about? We all have our heads down. We're all doing a million things at once. It's kind of hard to maybe pick up these messages from the universe that you're talking about.
Well, it's not from the universe. Like, we use these words, like everyone's using manifestation. Manifestation simply means to make something happen, you know? Throw a glass, you make glass shards happen. It's just making something happen. The universe is the rest of the world around us. It's, you know, whatever our target happens to be in that moment. Anything that requires trust, I think, is a fool's game. You know, trust should only be used as a very last resort in the absence of any more grounded ability. I certainly don't teach people to trust their gut instinct, because your gut instinct may be that you didn't get enough sleep last night, or that, you know, there was a little psilocybin in your water. I mean, you don't know what a gut instinct is. So you stay with the rigor of, you know, let's say you want to give up your day job and you want to become, and you have a real sense that there's a market for what you're doing. You know, you want to be a comic book writer, and you have a real sense. Well, that part of that sense can be verified. Whether or not you can do it, you can send out feelers. So the intuitive part is you're recognizing that if you find there is a market for it, you're recognizing that your ability and the market mesh, and then finding the venue where you can sell. But all of that, to some degree, can be verified. I think that people, my observation in 40 years of teaching this, is that risk, when it's a risk, it's often not advisable. You can weigh a risk. So, you know, back to 2007, because that was documented, I called my broker. I said, sell everything. She said, why would you do that? It's an incredible market. She's still my broker, by the way. But it's an incredible market. I said, you know, I'm just not comfortable. I'm not feeling good things. She said, I said, I've made 30-odd%. So I don't make an extra percent until I feel comfortable. It's a risk I'm willing to take. So you don't throw out baby with the bathwater. If the risk looks like something that will destroy you, it's probably not a good one to take. And there are ways to mitigate it. And intuition can help you do that too. So then the target becomes, I want to become a comic book author. I don't even know what they're called. I should have picked an easier metaphor, easier example. I want to become a comic book author. Okay, I've done the research. There's a huge market, but what is there to show me that I am part of the market? And you see a convention, you get interested in this one producer of comic books that you never even thought of before, but all of a sudden you're kind of obsessed with. You do the logical thing intuitively. You go, you take your stuff, you say, I'm doing this. Would you be interested? You both like the same basketball team. Oh my God, there's an instant connect. The person guides you. It's the market. And then it becomes less of a risk. So I do not encourage risk-taking when it's not necessary. I encourage using intuition to find the things that make a risk less risky. And that's really what I do with companies. I think there's that whole thing, you know, if you don't jump, the universe won't support you. That's Lululand. You know, that's not smart. There are ways to anchor it.
Can I ask you one thing, just walking back to your point about sort of 2007, 2008, there's obviously a lot of people feeling the same about the current moment in time. What's your read on our current moment in time and whether the same kind of thing is about to happen? Because that's what I keep seeing swirling everywhere for businesses right now, mm-hmm. like hold, be conservative. You know, the stock market crash is coming the minute that, you know, all of the forbearances end.
So here's the thing. I predict markets for big funds where mm-hmm. if I am, as my son says, batshit crazy instead of intuitive in that moment, there are a bunch of other smart people who know the market. I never do that for individuals. I mean, I've done it on the radio by mistake a few times, which is how I got all the press, is doing it by mistake. But I don't, because you know what? You can be wrong. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, though. If, you know, there's a lot of anxiety now, both in the corporate world and as individuals. But the reality is, if you're anxious about something, look into the logical thing to do and the healthy, intuitive thing to do. Look into it. Notice how you can cover yourself. Can you afford to take a risk with this, but not with this? And if it is still bothering you, find someone who is an intuitive person, but also qualified to guide you. So for example, my financial manager, who was back with me and the one who told me, oh no, you're crazy to sell, she still is. She's one of the top managers in the US right now. Notice she, not in 2007, were there many she's doing it. Mm. And I defer to her. I tell her what I sense. I listen to what she says back, but ultimately I defer to her. Just like if I have a sharp pain that doesn't go away, I may get an intuitive sense of what it is, and I may explain that to my doctor. But I'm going to go to my doctor for that final word. And that's where mistakes are made with intuition. So
you haven't gone back to her like you did in 2007 and said, sell it all.
Boy, do you want to know that? No, I have not. And actually, I did not predict COVID. I did predict the market slump. And I actually called her and I said, listen, let's not put this year's retirement in the market, but don't sell everything because it's going to recover. And I mean, that was back in February or January, I forget, right when COVID happened. But I told her not to sell the prior before COVID, I mean, not to invest. You know, I think that we are very trained to look fearfully and it takes a lot of energy. Whereas if we look at the can do in a situation, okay, logically, there are a lot of changes. What can I do? So back to the prediction, I didn't predict COVID, but my companies were prepared because I did predict the market. And so they knew something was going to happen that was going to affect that market. Mm. That's really how intuition works. Intuition isn't a computer printout. And on some level, it's good. One of my strengths as an intuitive is I'm woefully undereducated. I'm really not interested in, you know, the current culture or the news. I have ADHD, so I don't remember anything anyway. So anyway, my responses are truly intuitive, not based on knowledge. But I think it's really, as individuals, as companies using our intuition, one way to ask an intuitive question is to do what I call a blind question. And I actually start my companies and my students off this way. I have them pick, you know, 20 questions, and I write them all down, and I assign them numbers, and I put them in envelopes. And then I have them answer the question without knowing what the question is. And it is, try this at home, it is uncanny. Because all your intuition needs is a defined target. And the information you come up with is really incredible. The other thing companies can do that's very helpful is you can have one department do readings for another department. So you can have hardware read software and software read shipping and shipping, you know, do financials. And because they don't know, you know, what you know interferes with what you can intuit.
More coming up from our guests, but first, a word from our sponsor. Hey, everybody. So hoping these conversations are getting you all fired up to finally start that business you always wanted to launch, or maybe take that side hustle to the next level. But maybe you need just a little more inspiration and information to kind of push you over the edge. Well, that's why I want to talk to you about Entrepreneur Insider. Entrepreneur Insider is a program that we have at entrepreneur.com that is geared to do all of that and more. It's a membership-based program that provides insights and advice from industry experts with exclusive benefits. Let me tell you about those benefits. When you join, you get access to premium articles, videos, webinars, really good webinars, I should add. These are not boring, put you to sleep slideshows. These are great experts that have really, really sharp advice that you can listen to and use them like 10 minutes later. It's really good stuff. You also get a weekly newsletter and you get an ad-free experience when you go to entrepreneur.com. Plus, you get a free one-year subscription to Entrepreneur Magazine. That paper thing that you could carry around and you never have to plug in to recharge. Really great articles every month, really awesome pictures. And sometimes it's nice to just read something on paper, I have to say, from my personal opinion. So, how much does it cost to join Entrepreneur Insider? It's only $5 a month. If you join today, you start boosting your business knowledge, growing your brand, you get access to all these great things. And seriously, those webinars, they're really, really good. I heartily recommend you doing it just for that. And also the magazine, really cool stuff. So if you are interested, and I know you are because you could hear the pleading in my voice that this is actually a really cool deal, visit entrepreneur.com/insider to unlock your access today. That's entrepreneur.com/insider. Unlock your access, get going, get fired up, do it today. And we're back. You know, you don't think of CEOs, the stereotypical CEO, as someone who would sort of buy into a lot of the stuff that you're talking about. Like, how did you start this journey? How did you get your first customer?
Well, first of all, you don't have to buy into it. If someone gives you a piece of accurate data that hasn't occurred yet, that they'd have no way of knowing, and it comes to fruition, they hire you. I actually find business is so much easier than a lot of other more mystical practices. You know, medicine, I really had to show my stripes before they adopted the methodology. Business, if you can make me money, if you can give me an edge, if you can predict something accurately, then you're hired. I don't need to understand it. My businesses, they don't want to learn how to do this. They just want me to do it. Right. And believe me, during COVID, everyone was offering me a show. You can't die. We can't have you die. I'm like, why don't you learn how to do this? But my first, so I started in the early 80s when this, you know, now people intuition is in the lexicon, or gut instinct, it's all in the lexicon. In the early 80s, it was not. I started because that was not true of the military, of universities. There was a lot of interest in the extended capacities of the human mind, in ESP, in remote viewing, in precognition. There was a lot of interest in this, mostly for military reasons. So there were a lot of little testing clusters. I was watching TV one day, and I'm a math and science nerd. I went to a school called Stuyvesant in New York, which is, you know, all math and science. Mm-hmm. And I was watching my typical nerd channel, and they were talking about the extended capacities of the human mind. Now, it had never occurred to me that everyone didn't know they could do this. So I, you know, with the ballsiness of a 21 or 22-year-old, pick up the phone, get the number. This is before the internet, guys. Those too young to remember when we still used pencils and papers and went to a library. But I called them up and I said, well, listen, I can do what you're talking about. So they had me come in. I came in and they took one look at me and I could tell they were really, they thought, you know, what are we going to do with this little slip of a thing? And they started this long explanation about how this works and what they're studying. I have an auditory processing disorder, so I'm not a good listener. So I said, you know what? Why don't you put a name in an envelope and don't tell me what it is? So one of them put a name in an envelope, and I held the envelope, and I gave, I'm from a whole family of physicians, three generations. I gave medical diagnosis. The head was a medical doctor. I wouldn't have done this. Medical diagnosis, prognosis, what was going on in the person's life, what was coming up. But I kept seeing two people, so I divided it. And I said, I'm so confused. One person this, but the other person, and I named them one person and the other person. It ends up that the person had put his own name, first name, in the envelope. His best friend, who was an artist with MS, had the same first name. So I was literally reading two people. And so a study developed around me, and I was kind of passed around. I really was not interested in the spiritual applications. I mean, first of all, I was like 22, you know, I was just interested that people were interested in me. I had no pony in the race. I didn't care. You know, I did their tests. I had nothing to prove. And except for realizing that, that I wasn't right all of the time, which, you know, I hate. it was really a grounded way. So my deal with them, though, because I am from three generations of physicians, and even though this was done by scientists, for me, it crossed over to weird. My deal with them was, we'll do this anonymously. So you're welcome to tape it, but never with my name, never with my, you know, I don't want it. They broke that promise. One of the tests was televised and I had an instant following. So that's basically how my career began. And I was overwhelmed. And the way that I dealt with being overwhelmed was I didn't really do individuals. I didn't want to be Guru Maharaji Day. I dealt with people who, if I was crazy, they would know it, you know, who wanted data and not some wisdom. I mean, I had no wisdom to share. I think the disappointment in me at a dinner party is that although intuitively I can give you the right thing to do and the right way to do it with your resources, I'm not that wise. You know, I'm a good filter for data that, you know, people don't realize they have access to, but it doesn't belong to me. It goes right through me and I forget it. And most of the time, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Someone gives me a question. I come up with whatever data I'm seeing, which makes no sense to me. I see in reporting. They know what I'm talking about. They're nodding. And I'm thinking, well, either we both drank the same Kool-Aid. But I love my work because I do work in a milieu where if you are going over to the crazy side, they'll fire you. You know it, which is so reassuring for me because a lot of this, you know, bump in the night stuff, I think is very dangerous. People believe everything, especially They're desperate. Companies believe anything.
Can I just jump in on that, Laura? I just wanted to ask you, because you've sort of circled around this point a bit, but like you there's sort of the points that are crazy and you know, there's, you obviously being asked sometimes to sort of analyze quite strange things, it sounds like. Can you give us an example of something that was strange that, you know, that you were asked to analyze and how you either walked it forward or walked it back?
I mean, I get such weird requests. I mean, I haven't for a long time because other than my students, I just read the same companies I've read for 30 years. But one big, very powerful group wanted me, after John Lennon died, wanted me to channel his next song from death, to which I gave a, and they offered me, this is before my son's born. So this is the late 80s, I guess, maybe 80, I forget when John Lennon died. They offered me hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. And as a matter of fact, did these worshipful, it was way creepy.
Wow.
And it was a hard no. I mean, I could have made up anything.
I was going to say, you couldn't just hum a tune and just
I could have, but you know, I don't believe in hell. I think we create it for ourselves, and we create it for ourselves when we do something that is ethically disgusting. And for me, that would have, even if I could have done it, I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
So for me, I like to be grounded. It's not that someone couldn't do that. Who knows? It's that how do you prove that? And that is my yardstick always for my students, for my companies when I train them, and for myself. If I am saying something, it needs to be something that can be proven or disproven. Perhaps with the passage of time, because when you predict, it can't be proven until it happens. But when you get into the places of, you know, people who say, well, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen after you die. Well, how do I prove that until I'm dead? So right. I think people have to be very careful. And the wonderful thing, again, about companies, and I think companies have something to teach civilians in this. Companies are very open to what works. And I started in the 80s. I worked with Dr. Larry Waitz on new HIV drugs. I worked with, you know, big investment firms. I worked with archaeological firms. I worked with entertainment. I never found that people, you know, that companies were skeptical. If it was correct, they accepted it, even though they didn't understand it. You know who gives you problems? People at dinner parties who come up to you and say, "Hi, you're Laura Day. What's my name?" It's like, really? I want to do this at a dinner party? No, thank you. You know?
You ever notice, like, you know, obviously the listening base of this is a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of sort of small business owners and people who sort of, you know, thinking about, you know, the questions of growing, expanding, all the rest of it. Do you find that there are, and you have individual clients as well as businesses, obviously. Do you find there are people, oh, you don't?
Are business
celebrities? Oh, no more.
I read my students. So I train intuitives, and people are just interested in knowing more about it. I read them when I train them without charging. I read them.
Okay.
And I start every reading with, I can be wrong. Do not give up your own judgment and power for anyone. Let's start that here. No, I only read companies as for work.
Okay, got it. So I guess, and then going, just sort of refining that question then, do you find that when, over these decades, when you've been working with different companies, that there is a sort of repeated pattern of things that companies can get blocked on? Like if there was some practical advice you could give the listener, of the entrepreneur, listener, reader, consumer, like these things often happen and this is how you can move past it.
I think that there are a couple big mistakes, but the biggest mistake I see is that, as with individuals, companies fall in love with their identity long after their identity becomes a dead body they're dragging behind them. Whether that identity is the sector of the market they invest in, whether it's the way that they market, And I think that, and good companies have these people. I think it's good to give your employees, all of your employees, a voice, because often those out-of-the-box ideas that will keep you from being trapped by your identity and stunted by your identity and not flexible enough to respond to a market that may change in ways you didn't predict, is to listen to the voices of your employees, because they are often both really good observers of data that you may be a little too high up to see on the ground, but also they, if you really give them a non-shaming voice, they often come up with ideas that they can't explain, but that help you see something that perhaps you were blinded to. So that's the number one biggest mistake that I see is you fall in love with a position, you fall in love with an identity, and that becomes your blinders. And that also, I mean, that I think that happens with individuals as well. The other thing is to get stuck with what you think of as data. So a lot of companies that wanted to expand didn't, and they didn't know why they didn't, and then COVID hit. But I think that what a company tends to do is look at forecasters that forecast based on the past. And the reality is that you know, who could have predicted 2 or 3 years ago that actually the movement in entertainment would be inclusive now? Only an intuitive could have predicted that. So find your intuitives in your organization, listen to them. And if there is no risk, there are ways without having to take an intractable position to make your company more flexible, to make, Ruth, your portfolio more flexible. You know, there is a way where you don't have to be out of the market, but maybe if you're getting a sense, you invest differently. You don't maybe gain as much if you're wrong, but you certainly don't lose as much if you're right. So, you know, it's that willingness to be flexible. It's funny. I always am shocked, and of course I'm making the company up, but let's say it's a fast food chain. Fast food chain, they hire a $5 million consultant to tell them what their market wants, and yet they don't ask the people who are serving the customers, what are they looking for? You know, and right. So they're always behind the curve. How long did it take McDonald's to make a salad? You know, they're always behind the curve.
Right.
So intuition aside, one of the things that intuition helps you do is to notice the resources that you have that you might not have noticed before.
So for people who, you know, we've talked a lot about established companies and businesses. So maybe looking ahead a little bit, as you know, we all feel like there's some kind of light at the end of the tunnel with the pandemic. What's your intuition telling you? If I, you know, I've been dreaming of starting my own business for years, and I think this is the year I'm going to do it. Like, what would you say you're feeling is the industry that's really going to pop?
So here's, once again, I would never predict that for a civilian. But one of the things I do want to say is I've worked during the pandemic, because one of the things I did during the pandemic is I said, you know, I've made a lot of money for my readers, for my students, for my companies. Let me give something back. So I started doing these very large free workshops. You know, Zoom only let me have 1,000. So it would be 1,000 at a time. And I started doing these really large workshops, and these people remained part of the group. It's been over a year now since the pandemic began. And one of the things I noticed is that people who used an intuitive process started great businesses during this time, profitable businesses. I mean, hey, mask makers, give me a break. You know, this little tiny company that made this organic hand sanitizer, huge now. They're selling gallons. So also things like Love. people found love. People used to jump into bed and nobody ever stuck around. All of a sudden had to learn to use different tools. And if they had an intuitive can-do attitude, some of them, this was the greatest time in being able to find a committed relationship. So I don't think there is no tunnel and everything is light. It is not always easy. Change is hard, as mammals, and mammals run companies and mammals run the world. As mammals, although some of them have been a little reptilian the past 4 years. But anyway, as mammals, we don't like change. You know, change brings risk. But if you look for the can-do and the change, what happens is intuition does get engaged, because once again, you have a target, you have a goal. You know, what is your goal? Is your goal making your job successful, or is your goal having a successful career? Those are separate goals. Is your goal as a small company to do X, or what is your goal? Or is your goal to be successful even if you need to let this company go and start afresh? And intuition doesn't make things magically easy. I mean, people like to magicalize intuition. Intuition's just data. But data is helpful because data makes any market a good market to invest in. You know, data allows any set of circumstances to be profitable. And I know that sounds harsh, but this has been a very profitable time for many industries. And once again, I'm not a business consultant. I'm an intuitive consultant. So I can only comment on what I see in the groups that work with intuition. Initially, I did see both companies and individuals saying, oh my God, you know, how do we, this is the end. And then, like, if it's the end, let's not waste each other's time. But what is it you need to do here? And there is always a way, not always a desirable way. Sometimes it's let's close, sell off our machinery and start fresh in this new paradigm. Start fresh and small. You know, sometimes you do, you know, lose a temporary limb, have some misery. And I think that the other part of culture is that winners are always winners. Actually, strength and power is highly overrated. Flexibility and adaptability, which does sometimes take letting your stock price go soft for a while, or letting, you know, or losing a piece of your market for a while. That is what truly I've seen over 40 years, truly adaptable companies and people are made of.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, some amazing stuff you've given here, and you've written 6 books. You said you talk, you know, to thousands and thousands of people. So you have a lot more to say, a lot more for people to get informed. So what are some ways that people can, you know, learn more from you about this, walking this path?
LauraDay.com. I have a few trainings, but a lot of free workshops, but also my professional intuitives, because I don't take new clients. So I'm training people to refer. And the way that I evaluate if they're still reading well is on my Instagram. So if you want to both give a reading and learn and get a reading, post on the Laura Day Intuitive at Instagram. And, you know, some of the people will be novices. Some of the novices are amazing, but there are a lot of pros because that's how I evaluate their work. I wouldn't have time to do it one by one. And also, you know, all of the books are workshops, because talking about intuition, interesting, not very powerful. Being in the situation, I mean, I really encourage you guys to even 5 envelopes, 5 separate questions, 5 in 5 identical envelopes, have someone else stuff the envelopes, hold them, and just notice what you notice. You know, anything. Don't say this is intuitive, this isn't. Notice what you notice. Write it down or speak it into a recorder and do it very quickly so you don't have time to be intellectual or creative. You'll blow your own socks off, and then you will be more likely to engage intuition in your daily business decisions and life decisions.
Wow. Ruth, what do you think? You want to try the envelope game?
I love that. I think we should do it, Dan.
All right, let's do it.
Do it for each other. because that's even better, not knowing what the questions are. Do it for each other. I think the hardest thing for people is realizing that intuition works best in the complete absence of information. So already you two may know each other too well what your questions would be. But a when you can get a complete stranger to do a passable reading for you by not letting them know what the question is, by saying, I have a question written down here. I want you to notice everything that comes to your attention and speak it as quickly as you can, even if it's complete garbage.
Wow.
I think we should do it, Dan. I think by the power of Zoom, we're disconnected sufficiently that we can do it.
I think so too. So we'll have to do that on a very special episode. But Laura, we want to thank you for dropping some knowledge here today. Really fascinating what you do, and hearing your kind of method and just how sort of not as, you know, kind of out there as it might sound when you just read a quick sentence about what you do. It's pretty amazing. So I want to thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We'll talk again soon. Well, you tell me, will we? That was a stupid joke. All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you later.
Bye.
That's our episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Get a Real Job comes out every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you harvest your favorite podcasts. Leave us a review, give us a share. Don't make me beg people. Go to entrepreneur.com for new episodes of this and to listen to our other great podcasts. Thanks.